Cogent. Cogent. These people are insufferable. It's the news according to me. Good Tuesday morning, November 19th, 8:24 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Yeah, I'm a little bit late getting into this, and then I am at the home studio. So tomorrow morning, you can pretty much count on me being, well, no, I'm not going to be able to. I've got an appointment tomorrow morning, so I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen tomorrow. I'll be able to do the show. I'm just not sure where it's going to be from. It's probably not going to be from the worldwide headquarters. I was kind of hoping to do a worldwide headquarters show tomorrow, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be me here at the home studio again. Now, Thursday morning is a whole different story. That very likely could be the show of the week. Yummy. I have in my cup this morning, I have a combination chai. It's a Pacific Island chai as well as Big Train chai. I've mixed the two together in powder form. And then I have, of course, my Almond Joy creamer in there. And then I've got in my backup cup, I've got an interesting blend of apple cider and Joe sweet tea, peach sweet tea, sorry, peach tea. I tried this about 2 weeks ago and I kind of liked it. It's actually pretty good. It's about a half and half blend. Probably the rest of the day I'll be drinking just apple cider, but it's right now I got this 50% ways anyway. I went to, a lot of interesting things. This Cogent thing. So, Morning Joe, who it's Joe's, Joe Scarborough, something. And Mika Brzezinski. She didn't take her husband's name because obviously for obvious reasons. Because that's the way they do it. He supposedly was a Republican at one time. Back when he ran for office, but he was also very controversial and had these people who are just rhinos who switch over to the other, the Republican in name only. People like Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger. They think it's such a big deal that I'm a Republican and I'm against Trump. No, you're not. First of all, you're not a Republican. It's just, you're not. You're a rhino. And on top of being you can be an establishment person and you can also be a rhino. You got somebody like Mitch McConnell, who is an establishment guy through and through all the way to the core, who has his tentacles running everywhere in government, is now pushing back. I guess he's stepping out at the end of this term. I guess at the end of his term here. I guess this is his last. I guess this is going to be his last term. I thought he was still going to be in office for a while, but I guess. So this new House Majority Leadership guy that they've got. This is why they did this on the down low. Secret ballot. Again, it's it's not the people that vote that count. It's the people who count the votes. Well, apparently this guy that Mitch wanted to get in there got in there. So which I think is a little bit ridiculous. So Mitch is saying there's not going to be, there will be no, what do they call it? Session, what do they call a session? What it was, is it, I can't remember. I'm not thinking very well this morning. I need some more. That's good stuff. It's good for your brain. Recess appointments. See how well that worked? That refined my brain. It just went right straight to the chai went straight to my brain. It lasts about 3 seconds, and then I have to use it while I can. I have, so they have these recess appointments, which means that just when Congress is in recess, they get enough people in there to make an appointment. Mitch McConnell was yelling and screaming that there's not going to be any recess appointments. Of course, that's backfired on him a little bit because there's a whole bunch of people that are responding to that and not very happy about the whole fact. And surprisingly enough, Lindsey Graham is kind of on the side of this whole thing. Now, you've got some other senators that are chiming in and saying that, everybody does recess appointments. You can't just bar this guy. You can't. Obviously, Mitch McConnell hates Donald Trump. He just hates him. And how Mitch McConnell has been able to stay in office all these years. Once these people get in office, by the way, the machine becomes so large, and they become, you know, they become the masters of the PAC groups that they oversee. Supposedly, they're not supposed to have anything to do with PACs, but they have these PAC groups that don't. It's complicated. It's a complicated mess of just. It's a weaving underbelly of sludge, basically, is what it amounts to, and it's pathetic the way they manipulate other people. Our District 2 representative here for many years, when she first ran, she was in a state house and she ran for office. And of course, at that time, it was John Boehner, I think, was in he was the Speaker of the House, and of course he was in charge of the money flow. And he allocated a bunch of funds to her campaign. And the next time it came around to vote for the Speaker of the House, well, they play that card, and then they, of course, they cash in on it. Time to cash in on your, we gave you this money, now it's time for you to cash in and pay us back with the vote for Speaker of the House. And people in this area were pretty upset that she voted for the guy, because we were not happy with him. He was turned out to be a turncoat. And of course, while all this was going on, they ended up, the next time around, like, I don't think she took any money from the PAC group or however it happened. And then she ended up not voting for it the next time. Now, I still remember back in 2020 how people responded. We have a particular individual here, in our representative here by the name of Braun. And I remember how he responded to the 2020 election. And at this point, I am very, I haven't forgotten that. I rarely write letters to congresspeople. I don't write them very often. And I did write one that time. And I still remember what happened there. And he has not proved to me that he's changed his colors at all. Donald Trump helped him get elected here in this state. And he turned out to be I believe he's more of an establishment individual than he is a true conservative. So until he proves me otherwise, I mean, maybe he is, maybe he thinks he is, but I don't know. Hasn't proved that to me. So he's got to prove that to me before I will accept that. I'm not going to vote against him, but I'm not going to vote for him either. I told him that. That's the way it is. That's the office I skip over. And of course, it's Indiana, so he won anyway. But once these people get in office, they think they're immune, and they have immunity because they're popular and they have all this money flow. So they stay in office for long periods of time. It's a very corrupt situation. So Mika and Joe from the Morning Joe show, for the last 8 years, we've heard nothing but. In fact, they said they haven't even talked to the man for 7 years. Which tells you something about their character. And of course, now they want to talk to the guy. Yeah, sure, you can come down and talk to me, Mar-a-Lago. We'll set up an appointment. You come down and talk to me. Come on down. This is the fascist Nazi, the dictator that they've been talking about for the last. All of a sudden, they want to go talk to him. Well, we better establish communication. Yeah, you better. Because you've just been sitting back, not communicating, not answering any questions, not, you know, what amazes me, they talk about Jim Acosta and how he was treated under the Trump administration, because he got excommunicated from the press briefing room for a while. He got, because just for asking a question, he asked a question and they booted him out. That's not how it went down. This is how they're trying to portray what happened. You go back and watch the video of what happened there. Jim Acosta was, he was becoming very popular on the left for being the bulldog that was going after Trump, always yelling from, you know, from, he would record himself yelling, asking President Trump questions when it was obvious Trump, you know, he was so far away, he couldn't hear him asking, even asking the questions. He'd be back there yelling, asking these pointed questions. He was trying to make a point, making it look like Trump was avoiding the questions. So we just went through 4 years of a president staring right at people, asking him questions and just smiling and just walking off. Not knowing where he was going for sure, but he was walking off, walking away, literally avoiding the questions, never going to a press conference. He only went to one press conference at the White House. One. And it was after the election. Or actually, after he stepped down. Was it before? I think it was before the election. Before the election. Oh, yeah, it was before the election. It was before the election. It was after he stepped down. And it was while Kamala was doing this big event somewhere, big event. For her, it was a big event. Some rally somewhere she was having. And of course, he comes out with this press conference. He's going to come out to the press conference, press corps. Which kind of took some of the wind out of her sails. Coincidence? I don't know. Who knows? So they get a jump on Trump for you know, getting mad at Acosta and booting him out of the press, taking away his press credentials, denying him access to the press briefings. And what happened was, he was asking a question, and Trump was there. Trump used to actually go to the press briefings. He would show up once in a while, you know, once a month or so. He would just show up and start answering questions. When was the last time you saw a president do that? Most people don't even remember Joe Biden ever doing that. You know, I think he did it once in 4 years. Other than just, you know, going from the helicopter and waving and yelling and smirking and whatever. And so he was asking Trump these questions, and Trump was done with him. He answered a couple of questions to him, and of course Acosta kept going down this path that was just it was ridiculous. He'd answered the question, and he was going, ready to go. He said, "No, it's enough. You're done. I'm next person. Next person." Trump was basically just saying, "I'm done with you. I've answered your questions. It's time to give somebody else a chance." There was a young lady, an intern probably, who was walking around carrying the microphone for all these people. And he was supposed to return the microphone. She came up to get the microphone from Acosta, and Acosta wouldn't let it go. She went to take the microphone, and he shoved her out of the way and kept the microphone. She had her hand on the microphone, and he pushed her away. At that moment, you can tell, Trump saw it. And you can tell his whole attitude towards Acosta changed at that moment. Now, he's not one to lash out, but you can tell he was not appreciative of the way he treated her. This is the guy who, you know, is on the side of women, supposedly. I think if Acosta shows up again at a press briefing when Trump is there, they should have a Marine walking around with a microphone. In full battle gear, armed to the teeth, walking around with the microphone. He doesn't let go of it. He just holds it in front of your face, lets you talk, and then he's done. That's when it comes to Acosta, anyway, everybody else, I don't care. But so these people are ridiculous. So the Brzezinskis, they decided to go down to talk to Donald Trump in Mar-a-Lago. They actually were invited to Mar-a-Lago to go talk to the president-elect. President-elect. And they announced it on their show. "We went down to talk to him, and we let him know we don't agree on everything you say." "Oh, well, big deal. That's good. I'm glad you don't. That's fine. But that's mighty big of you to not, you know. You know, I appreciate the fact they're not just fawning all over the guy, but at the same time, it's all of a sudden it's being seen on the left as they're just going nuts on the left about this. They're freaking out. Because, you know, this is the guy who told us that Joe Biden was the best version, the most cogent, best version of Joe Biden ever ever since he's been in office for 35,000 years or whatever, however long he's been there. It's just the best. This is the best version of Joe. 5 days later, after the debate, if you want to call it that, Kamala Harris is the most qualified person. Joe needs to step down. He's the most heroic person for stepping down, for allowing the new generation to take over, turning the page. That's how wonderful he is. He's the most cogent, best version we've ever had, and it's so great that he's sacrificing himself, falling on his sword, for time for a new generation. So there's still a lot of squabbling going on, a lot of politicking going on behind the scenes. Some very scorned individuals, and Joe and Jill are not the only ones. And there's a lot of people behind the scenes that got burned on that whole thing. So there's a lot of animus floating around right now. And of course, now Kamala, I don't know if she's been out doing or saying that. Peter Ducey. the young Ducey asked the question of Karine Jean-Pierre. He said, what? He asked Karine about this. So was it, how awkward was it to have her come back with, so she came back and had dinner with, or, you know, had lunch with Joe Biden. How was that awkward for her because of the, you know, what happened there during the whole campaign thing with him? Forcing him to step down, and Karine just acted like, "What are you talking about? What do you mean? What are you talking about? I don't understand your question. What are you talking about?" So you understand fully well what's going on here. If you saw the way Jill Biden treated Kamala, the last public gathering that they had, you'd be fully aware that there's very bad things going on here. But I digress. You know, for some reason I got this story on my mind, and I'm not sure why I'm talking about this. It has nothing to do with anything going on in the news. When I was 17 years old, I graduated from high school, and I had a full-time job. I worked for a year, so I was 18 years old. I went off to a trade school, and I became a scuba diving instructor. Now, prior to that, I was going to a Taekwondo studio. I was going through the ranks. I would train almost every day. And as I was going through this process, I went off to this trade school, went to be a scuba instructor. I was down in San Diego, California for a while. Went to the Patty Gold College back in the 80s. I don't think it exists anymore. I don't think it's there anymore. In fact, I should look and see what's going on with that, because maybe it does exist. I don't know. Let's see here. The Professional Association of Diving Instructors. See if there's anything. Might be on Wikipedia, maybe. It's got a history of what happened back there. Earned college degree credit for Patty courses. Patty.com. I don't know. Certification cards. Patty was. Yeah, there's no such thing anymore as a Patty Gold College. Patty Gold College. Let's see if I can type one more thing in there. San Diego. Let's see if that says anything. Nope. House of Scuba. I believe it was bought. It looks like it was bought out. The name probably changed. But anyway, probably that. So anyway, I was a scuba instructor for a while. Now, at this Patty Gold College, you got every certification that Patty offered. So in other words, you had. I was a technician. I was a tank inspection guy. I was a research rescue diver. Photography, underwater photography, everything that they had, master diver, all that stuff. you went through this whole process, and you were a scuba instructor. So you were you walked out of that school knowing anything and everything about scuba diving at the time, and as far, you know, as far as the technology at that time. Very good school, and it, one of the things I learned there was I learned a lot about sales at that point. I didn't know that much about sales before that, but at this point, this guy that was the head of this college, he was a sharp guy, really knew sales and promotion marketing very well. Now, I'm sure he's passed away now, but this was 40 years ago, folks. Yeah. And at least 40 years ago, probably more than that, actually, come to think of it. So he was an old guy then. But one of the things he taught us, because he, you know, he's talking about scuba diving, the industry, a bit how to market, you know, because we basically walked out of there being able to manage a dive store. That's kind of where we were. You know, we didn't have the experience, but we had the knowledge of marketing and everything else. It was the school started at 8 o'clock in the morning. You went till you know, you had a lunch break. You had, you know, when you'd go diving in the pool in the morning, you'd go diving in the ocean in the afternoon, and you'd have evening classes as well. It was a very intense program, and it lasted about 3 months. And at the end of that 3 months, then you went to work. Local dive stores would hire you, and so you start working there. I made the mistake of coming back home right around springtime, and realized how green everything was here. San Diego was pretty much a desert. When I got here, everything was in bloom. It was green. It was life. There was life here. There was water. You could just drink the water out of the tap. Didn't taste like a pool. And I was shocked. And I stayed here. I didn't go back. So the interesting thing... about all of that was what I learned about sales and marketing and business. Now, my dad had, you know, I grew up, my dad had a business almost, he had some kind of a business on the side most of his life. And I grew up kind of around that all the time. And my dad owned a marina when I was going through high school. And I actually had managed that basically through the summertime. I would pump gas and run the thing during the day while he was off working, because he didn't do it full time until he got to the point where we were actually busy enough he could do it full time. Quit his full-time job and did that, which was a seasonal business, which was, you know, it's fine. You make your money in the summer and then you kind of sit around all winter until hoping you can make it through the winter till spring and then do it again. So I learned a lot, you know, being part of that. So when I got to this point where this guy was teaching stuff about marketing and different things, I really absorbed it really well because my mindset was already kind of there. I was kind of primed for that. Like the catalyst was there. So I ended up learning about sales. And one of the things I learned was that this, in fact, if I can find this, I'd like to find this. Let's see if I can find the video I actually watched, because I think it was a short, possibly, but it was very good. It was, there we go. Let's go to history. One of the things I learned that this guy who would talk about this stuff, he said, you can't just, you know, he told this story about when he went to buy a car. And I've never forgotten this. He said he went to buy a car. And as a salesperson, he wanted this guy to sell him a car. He didn't want the guy to just, what's the word? He didn't want to just be, the guy, he basically went up to buy this car. It was a little sports car. He was going to buy it for his girlfriend. This guy, anyways, he's the kind of guy who would write out a check for stuff. And that blew me away at the time. I had no idea that you could actually, people would just do that kind of thing. So he went up to buy this car, and this guy was just kept telling him it was a great car. It was a good car. This is the best car on the lot. This is a good car. You'll like this car. It's a fast car, blah, blah, blah. Never really told him anything about the car. He said, I want to buy this car, but I want you to sell me the car. I don't want you to just, you know, I don't want to just walk up and buy the car. I don't want you to just. So, here we go. This is it. Let's see if I can see here. And the title of this video is the importance of understanding your product. That's the title of this video. Now, one of the things he talked about was, I want to know about the features and benefits. Features and benefits. You have to explain the features and benefits of this product. And you'd be surprised at some of the conversation that has happened since I posted this. I'm going to play this because I think it's important. This guy, she has a little cup here with full of all kinds of little candies and has a bow on top. And this is by Charles Noya, he's a fellow, CHN Advisors, I think is what it is. this video is interesting. She thinks that she has a unique product here. So it's a little plastic cup. It's clear. It's got some like Christmas decorations on the outside, like a printing of some kind. It's got all kinds of candies and stuff on the inside. So this is what she says. What happened to it? Why is it not playing now?
So this is the deep.
We bought this transmission.
Yeah, there we go. Here we go.
This is one of your products, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Can you describe what's on the table in front of you?
I think it's fantastic. It's fun. It's unique. It's beautiful.
So this is a unique product.
That's correct.
Now, listening to her describe what was on the table in front, he asked her to describe what was on the table in front of her. And she said, it's fun, it's fantastic, it's unique. Now, you're not seeing the visual I'm seeing. Would you have any idea what the product is that she just described? No. It could be a puppy. It could be a car. It could be a scooter. You know, what is it? You don't know. It could be a spinner. I don't know. You just don't know. She thinks she's got a unique thing there. It's unique. It's fun. It's fantastic. Okay. This guy proceeds. So this guy proceeds to debunk everything she just said.
Product.
That's correct.
Here's one of your competitors.
Looks exactly the same.
Here's another one of your competitors. Now to me, that just looks exactly the same.
So to me, they don't look the same.
They're identical.
It's hand-packed.
That won't make any difference to the consumer.
I think the bow on the top adds to the value of it.
So it's the bow?
The bow.
This is one of your products, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Can you describe what's on the table?
So he goes back through the whole thing again. It's the bow. The bow mix. Okay, so in the midst of this, the whole point of this was you don't know your product. Now, you might sell some of those because people will see it. Oh, that's cute. I like that. I'm gonna buy it. That's kind of where that goes typically because people do buy things emotionally. They buy things based on art or the artistic look, or they just see it and say, yeah, it's more of an impulse item because it's, what is the thing, $15? I don't know. It's a cup full of candy. Maybe it's 10 bucks. I don't know. Who knows what it is? The others looked exactly the same. They were cups full of candy, but they're competitors. Now, if you have no competitors, it doesn't matter what you say about it. If people like it, they're going to buy it. But the point is, you need to know what your product is. You need to be able to describe it. If you were in an elevator and somebody says, that was the only product you sold. That was what you were known for. You were on an elevator and you didn't have one with you. Somebody would say, what do you do? Well, I sell a fantastic, unique product. Oh, one of those. I'll take one. No, you see, you can't even, you should be able to, your little 2-minute pitch has just blown. It's just blown. What is it, a car? What is it? Well, it's a couple of candy. Okay, that's more than I've got before, which is the fantastic, unique thing. But I've seen cups full of candy before, which you sell all, like every time I see a cup full of candy, they're all yours? No. What makes you stand out beyond the competitor? Why should I buy yours as opposed to the other three that are on the shelf? So I said this. This is what I typed in. I said, yep, learned this about sales when I was 17 years old. You can't just say, quote, this is a great hammer. This is the best hammer, a fun hammer. A fun hammer to use, and it looks awesome. You have to know what the weight is, what the handle is made of, the type of grip it has, what kind of steel it's made of, what the warranty is, etc. This knowledge has served me well over the last 45 years. You would be amazed. Now, I've got 9,000 likes from that comment. 9,000 likes. I'll go with that. A lot of people liked that comment because they understand sales. Then I get 45 replies. 46 now, I guess. The first one, very first one. I'm really not trying to start something here in the comment section. I'm just genuinely curious. What you describe is exactly how Donald Trump speaks about everything. Why is it considered a bad business practice, business tactic, if it seems to work on a lot of people? I.e., we have the best. My people are telling me it's the greatest, etc. That was this person's comment. They have a point. That kind of rhetoric does work in some things if they know what the product already is. Now, if you want to be a car salesman and you don't know what your inventory is, and somebody walks in on the lot and says, hey, I like this. I'm looking at Jeeps, and I'm looking at what kind of Jeeps you guys have. Maybe it's a used car lot. And there's one there that catches their eye. That's the first, we are drawn to certain amount of artwork, how something looks the way it looks and how we think we're going to look in it, or how people are going to see us, how we think we're going to feel sitting in that car and owning it, driving it. Dave Ramsey has a really good statement about that kind of thing. It's the one thing we buy. The only reason we buy it is because we think other people see us when we're in it. People will spend $40,000 on a vehicle just because of the way they are perceived when they're in it, instead of what it does for you to get you from point A to point B. It's amazing how we get tricked into that by our psyche, how we feel in that car. Now, I buy Volvos. I don't think I've ever paid over $8,000 for one. The one I have now has 311,000 miles on it. But you wouldn't know it if I was going down the street. You'd think it was a brand new car, or, you know, fairly new car. Because Volvos hold up. We've put 200,000 miles on that car. We bought it used for $8,000. It has served us well. Now, we go have another one that has 227,000 miles on it, and another one that has 270,000, I think it is. You have three of them. All of them over 200,000 miles. The one car that I have that has less than 200,000 miles is my truck, and it has 110,000 miles, and it's falling apart. That's beside the point. It's a Dodge. It goes with the territory. It's also 20 years old, by the way. I bought this in 04. Bought it in 03. It's brand new. Last brand new car I'll ever buy. So the issue here is that you have when somebody steps onto a lot, they tend to get connected to a particular car. And I've dealt with this with people that have taken me along with them. There's this one gal that we know. I think I've told this story before, but this one gal that we know, she's single. She was going to buy a car, and she had her mind set on this car, and now she's decided she's going to buy this car. She really likes this car. And she wants to take me along to see if I can get a better. She knows how I am. I typically will walk away with a really good deal on a car. I can get them down at least $1,000, and sometimes two or three. A buddy of mine, I took to look at a car, and we got him down $5,000 on the car. It's ridiculous. This was back in 1980, 82, 81, somewhere in there. And actually, it was 83, I guess it was. So this guy. So I go to look at this car, and on the way there, she says, "No, she wants to buy the car." I said, "You're not willing to walk away from the deal." She said, "No, I want this car." I said, "Well, then I can't do much for you. If I make an offer and they turn it down, you have to walk away. You can't just say, okay then, you know, beefsteak. I don't know what you do at that point. You know, I can walk away and you can just stay there and say, okay, I'll buy it. But now I can probably find something with the car that we can get the price down maybe, but that's now you're, that doesn't always work. Sometimes they always say, well, that was built into the price of the car. We knew that. So I've had that happen to me before. I found a whole bunch of stuff wrong with the car. Came back, I went out, test drove it, came back and I had a list of stuff. Well, all those things were in the list, were in the price was reflective of those things being wrong with it. I was like, well, why didn't you tell me those things were wrong with it? So I don't want to do business with you now because I feel like you haven't disclosed all these things, which is, again, another thing. You go to buy a house, you go to buy anything. Oh, that's why realtors are required to disclose things to you when you buy a house. Disclosure is very important. If they know of something wrong with the house or know of something going on, they're supposed to disclose that to you. Again, that's knowing the features and benefits. It's part of that whole thing. Know your inventory. You know, somebody might walk up and see a Jeep and they say, hey, well, you know, I really like this Jeep. That's what I'm looking for, this Jeep. And they happen to mention a few things. And you're like, well, you know, this may not be the Jeep for you. We got another one over here that's the color you want. And it's got the right kind of interior. And it's actually, has lower miles. It does have, it's $1,000 more, but it's got everything you want. What can I do to get you in this car today? So that's the whole thing about sales. Well, you'd be amazed at some of the comments I've received back from some of these people. Now some people have stood up and defended. There's a whole conversation now. There's like 46 comments so far, and probably five of them. This one guy says, great, you sell hammers, brother. I'm like, I didn't respond to any of these other than one guy who he said, but I came for a cheese grater. Still, I think I'll buy the hammer. And that's actually a very good point. A really good salesman, you might have came for a cheese grater, and next thing you know, you're buying a hammer because this guy knows hammers. Now, I've never sold hammers. I kind of used it as an example. These people think I'm a hammer salesman. Now, some other people have said some other things. Like this one guy says, it's hand-packed. He's quoting her. This guy says, that won't make any difference to the consumer, which is what the guy says. Words heavier than gold is what this guy says about that comment. And it is true. It's absolutely true. This guy says, when I'm buying something, I don't want to hear what material it's made of, etc. I just want to know what it is. How is this valuable advice? He just wants to know what it is. It's a car. I'm going to buy this. What is this? It's a hammer. That's a hammer. Okay, I'll buy it. I don't care what it's made of. I don't care what it's, I don't care about the material or what kind of warranty it has. I don't care about how it's made or what the grip is or what the hammer is made for. It's just a hammer. It's a framing hammer. Oh, that's even more. That's too much information for me. I don't need to know that. I just need to know it's a hammer. That's all I need to know. I'll buy it. Because it's a hammer. You see, the problem is there's five other hammers sitting on the table, and you're the salesperson for that particular brand of hammer. You better know that hammer. And maybe it's not the consumer that comes to the store to buy it, or the person who's online shopping and just picks out a hammer, puts hammer in the search window in Amazon, and just buys the first hammer he sees that the picture looks good. This is you might be the person supplying the hammers, the company selling the hammers. You better know everything about that hammer, because I guarantee you, somebody who's reselling the hammer is going to want to know everything they can about that hammer, because they've got to sell it. Now, granted, there are a lot of people out there who will not care what the hammer's made of and what there are plenty of people out there who will buy on emotional content that just impulse buy. Great, because they're going to buy your competitor's hammer the same way. What's going to make you stand out and take over the market? You need to be able to have to dominate the market, and the only way you're going to do that is to get, first of all, get their trust by knowing your product. There was a time when I sold this product. I had a business that I started back in 2005. It was a fairly complicated business. There was a product that I designed, took to market, took it to trade shows, and it was basically my invention or my design of an invention. And it was, so I invented it, manufactured it, had suppliers that manufactured many of the parts, and I assembled all the components. You'd be surprised the things I had people asking me questions on at trade shows. I'd be at a 4-day trade show and my voice would be shot by the end of that thing. I was talking all day long from 9 o'clock till 10 o'clock at night for 4 days, answering the same questions over and over and over. In fact, I answered them so many times I get the same questions over and over and over. My wife, if she was with me, she actually started answering the same questions, and she knew nothing about this product, but she had heard the answer so many times that she could answer it as well. Of course, once you answer one question, that digs the hole. They start asking more questions. But you'd be surprised how some products will sell themselves. They're impulse items. It's chewing gum. It's Wrigley's. You know, whatever. You know, what do you need to know? Stick it in your mouth, chew it. People will buy things on impulse. Art is that way, especially. Art just has no functional purpose whatsoever. It's just art. However, art spills over into the design and the way things look. A car, you can buy a car that will get you from point A to point B and maybe have all the same components inside of it, but it looks different. In fact, it gets down to the point where the color makes a difference to some people. Well, it's blue and I really want a red car. Okay, well then I'm not going to buy that because it's blue and they don't have a red one in stock. Okay, that's important to you. It's based on color. It's based on a thing. It has nothing to do with the functionality of the car. Everything else being the same, the warranty is the same, everything else is the same, but the color turns you off. Okay. So be it. That there are things, but knowing that the salesperson has an idea that, oh, we do have a red one back here and behind this, we have a red one, we just ordered it. It just came off the truck and it's being prepped right now. Because the salesman knows that kind of thing. You need to know your product. You need to know your inventory. Period. When somebody calls looking for a house, they drive past a house, they see it, they call the realtor. Realtor shows up, they're going to show them the house. And in the process, they find out that this isn't the house for them. They're looking, you know, what they're looking for. They have, you know, three kids. They work at a particular place in town. There's all this stuff. And this realtor happens to know the inventory of all the houses that are for sale. It may not be in his listings, but he's somebody else's listings. He just happens to know what the inventory is. Well, there's a house on the other side of town. It fits you perfectly. It's $10,000 cheaper, and it's right next to where you work. It's just 2 blocks away, and it's in a better school system. You just sold them a house. Just by knowing that for them. There's many reasons why you should know your product and know why it is different than your competitors, or just know what it is so you can describe it. And your competitors are going to look at it and say, "Whoa! So this has got candy that has all natural products, and it's all free of gluten or whatever it is. I don't know what. Naturally sourced, everything's whatever it is. You know, just got to describe those kinds of things. They're going to see your product very differently. And the next time they go to get it, the thing is, you're going to resell it again. They're going to buy another one." So it has you. It takes you over the top as a salesperson. That's the point I'm trying to make. It's not that somebody won't buy it. Well, see, I sold one. All I told them was it was a car, and they bought it, even though it was a hammer. You should see him driving it to work every day. It's ridiculous. They're driving his hammer to work. In today's consumer world as well, people tend to do a little more research. Especially but if you're selling something that's a high dollar machine type item, people are probably going to do some more research on the item that they're purchasing before they even come to talk to you, typically. And when you get into thousands of dollars for something, that people start becoming a little bit more discriminating about what they get. Oh, that's the only point I'm trying to make. I don't know why I'm going off on that today. I just, for some reason, it was stuck in my head. Now, the whole show has been based on that. But the one point this person was trying to make, getting it back to politics, is that Donald Trump is that way. Donald Trump said, this is the greatest. This is the best, the best. This is the greatest. It works in certain things. It will work. Now, we have somebody that we know more about. Donald Trump is a very known entity. He's had a TV. He's lived his life in public for a long time. We know what we're getting here. It's been on display for all of us to see. He doesn't have to give us all the details. And in fact, sometimes politically, right, especially right now, he wouldn't want to give you any details because they will sabotage those details. Now, he is coming out with a few more details than I would probably want to give him, give to the press and to the deep state right now, because I tell you, they're going to use anything they can against this guy. And I'm pretty sure right now they're trying, just like this whole deal with the missiles, that Joe Biden has now decided that he's going to allow Ukraine, and we're going to supply them with long-range missiles, and they're going to allow them to shoot them into Russia. This is too close. This is us, by proxy, sending missiles into Russia. We are attacking Russia by proxy. Russia knows that. They are amping it up. Now, right now, Russia's military is demoralized, and it's in very bad shape. This is why North Korea is helping. My understanding is North Korea is taking a beating. They are losing troops by the tens of thousands in Russia. They had a 40-man team there, to give you an example, of their elite forces that were sent to Russia. My understanding is their thinking was they were going to win the war for Russia with these elite forces. They're all gone. All 40 of them were killed in one attack. Russia had one of its worst days recently. I guess on average they lose about 1,000 people a day. They just lost 1,900, a little over 1,900, I think, in one day recently. And just in the last, I think it was 10 days, they've lost about, it was 40 or 50,000 people, I think. 40,000 soldiers, something like that. I can't remember what it was. And North Korea has lost I think about 10,000. So it's thousands of them. I don't know what it is. It's just ridiculous. And of course, this is where Donald Trump says, I want people to stop dying. Who do you want to see win this war? I want to see people stop dying. They've got to stop. Now, my understanding now is that Ukraine has actually pushed into Russia farther across the line than Russia has pushed into Ukraine. You have to understand, there's a lot of vast open territory that is not defended. It's just open area. Nobody's living there. It's uninhabited or very sparsely inhabited. So it's very easy to do that. My understanding is the way Russia has been attacking and has not been very efficient. There's whole bunches of things. And of course, the armament that we're providing for them is actually really putting them to shame. They're really having problems at this point. They're getting worn down. Let's just put it that way. I believe that they are both sides now are primed to stop this thing and make an agreement. And the fact that Trump is stepping in, I think, with the military that we're going to have, I think it's they're going to back off. This is done. It's a done deal. In fact, it may be over before he even steps into office on January 20th. I don't know. Or it could get worse. That's my concern is that these missiles may ramp things up to the point where it becomes nuclear. There are tactical nuclear weapons. That may become a reality over there. And if that happens, it's just who knows where it's going to escalate to at that point. Now, one of the things that concerns me, I've talked about this before, is that right before, between the time that Donald Trump took office and the time that or I'm sorry, between the time that the election was in 2020 until the time that Joe Biden took office in January 20th, General Milley claimed that Donald Trump was trying to get him to start a war in Iran so that he could stay in office. I don't know how that was not Donald Trump's thing, and it was never determined that that was the case. There has always been a plan. They always have tactical plans on how they would go to war with a particular country, whether it's Iran or Russia or China or whatever it is, Uzbekistan, whatever it is. They always have, you always want to have tactical plans. Was it Mad Dog? He was the guy that he had in charge for a while. Everybody thought he was cool until he wasn't. But this one of the things that the Marines typically will say this. They say, have a plan on how you're gonna kill everybody in the room. It's just how are you gonna take if you have to, you're gonna be able to take everybody out in the room. Have a plan when you step in the room. Be a gentleman, but if you have to, if it comes to that, have a plan for. That's just kind of the Marine mindset. Or the warrior mindset, I should say. So have a tactical idea. So this is same thing with the world. You want to have, because that's what you get paid for. You had one job. It was to be the military to defend your country. Whatever you have to do, you have to plan this out. If we go to war with somebody, if they attack us, or whatever happens, or if we have to attack them, or whatever it is, I don't know. Not something I really care to. It'd be really tough for me to be commander in chief. I'd probably pull all the military out of everywhere. But maybe a few places where we would be. I don't know why we have to be the nation's or why we have to be the world's police force. I don't understand some of that. But so. We have to have those kinds of plans. And so what Milley did was he brought this whole thing up. And I guess he presented the war plans to Donald Trump. And of course, Donald Trump said, oh, okay, thanks. And Milley turned it around and made it sound like Donald Trump requested those things because he was planning on going to war with Iran. This is the same General Milley that during all this stuff with the election and everything that happened in 2020, General Milley went to his Chinese counterpart, the military in China, and basically let them know, don't worry, we're not going to attack you guys. Behind Donald Trump's back. He's still the commander-in-chief. You just subverted. General Milley should be in prison for that alone. That's enough right there. There were other things that he did as well, but that, in my opinion, that was borderline treason. In my opinion, you don't do that without permission from your superior. That's just, you don't do that. You go and communicate with a foreign / enemy. Potential enemy. And you're going to do that. You're going to say something like that to them. About your military plans. Don't worry. I'm not going to let him push the button. Now, maybe he never did. I believe he did. I believe he did do that. Maybe it was just a publicity stunt. I don't know. Trying to make it sound like Donald Trump was unhinged. This is the guy who didn't start any new wars, didn't do anything crazy. I'm trying to make him out to be the crazy man. Leaves office, and we have two wars going on that didn't exist before, and we're funding two of them, basically. Anyway, my hour is up. I have a few things we'll get into tomorrow morning, possibly. It'll be an early show tomorrow morning, by the way. It has to be early because tomorrow's going to be a long day. I'm potentially going to have to go somewhere. And of course, on Thursday, I'll be traveling out to Dallas. be an interesting day. So in the meantime, folks, continue to pray for our nation. Pray for this transition time, that it goes smoothly and that everybody involved plays nice. There's honesty, openness, transparency, that the deep state doesn't win. Let's continue to pray for our nation, for all those involved, all of our leaders. God bless, folks. Have a great rest of your week, rest of your day. Take care. I will talk to you tomorrow. See ya.